Sophie.
And I'm Brad.
And welcome to Our Married Life, where we share conversations about our study of the Urantia Book and how to best live its teachings.
Well, Ruthie, this is an interesting episode for us. This week, we don't have a corresponding Tuesday Symmetry of Soul to match up with, so we're kind of exploring something a little bit different. And I thought the way I might introduce this topic is a quick little reflection from my own experience with a lifetime with the Urantia Book. I don't know if you can relate to this. Feel free to weigh in. But there's this thing that happens when people read the Urantia Book. There's this early reading experience you have where if it's going to resonate with you, it's going to resonate in a strong way. And what lights up off the page are these things that you say, wow, that's exactly the way I always thought it would be. That's exactly the way I thought it would be. Yes, exactly, exactly. You get all this affirmation. And then a funny thing happens. Sometime later, if you're maturing into your understanding of it, like any great work, any great text, the Bible, anything, you begin to notice some passages that are a little more like, wait, they said what? That's not what I believe. Wait, that doesn't make sense. That can't be. That sounds like the opposite of that. That sounds like what these other people out there are saying that I don't agree with. What is this book? And thus, something of the topic tonight that we wanted to sort of talk about, right?
Sure. Yes. As we pivot away for a moment from the early childhood of Jesus, unknowingly, we actually set this up, or you did, Brad. You asked with, 90 seconds to spare, oh, how do you feel about paper 33 and subordinating, the Mother Spirit subordinating to the Creator Son as the pattern of marriage?
I love your impression of me.
That's
great.
That's not how Brad said. I just needed something that's not my voice.
Right.
So anyway, we want to explore that. And it's provocative. I mean, effectively, I don't know that it, in concept, needs to be, but it feels that way. And I don't know a lot of Urantia Book readers who talk about this. So we wanted to back up a few parts in the book, early part of part two, and explore this mostly section 3 of paper 33.
That's right. Yeah. Did we want to start by just maybe reading a couple of the provocative paragraphs here?
Sure. Yeah, we'll start here. It is at the enthronement of the Creator's Son as a Master Son at the Jubilee of Jubilees. I'll interject here. This is after he's finished all 7 bestowals. It is at this Jubilee of Jubilees that the Universe Spirit, before the assembled hosts, first makes public and universal acknowledgement of subordination to the Son, pledging fidelity and obedience. Never before this moment, of course, had she done this.
That's right. And then there's a corresponding thing, a reciprocal thing that the son, Michael of Nebadon, does. It says, afterward, Michael of Nebadon nobly acknowledged his eternal dependence on his spirit companion, constituting the spirit co-ruler of his universe domains, and there was issued and went forth the final proclamation of equality.
Yes. So, all in one section, we have subordination, fidelity, and obedience that the Mother Spirit is promising the Son, and then reciprocally, the Son is eternally dependent. But all of this underneath the umbrella of equality.
And also all underneath the umbrella of them saying, this is a transcendent pattern on high for family, government, these relations. Forgot exactly how it's put there.
Well, let's find it right now. And this becomes the transcendent pattern for the family organization and government of even the lowly creatures of the worlds of space. This is, indeed and in truth, the high ideal of the family and the human institution of voluntary marriage.
Yeah. So, like I said, something you stumble over, something you don't notice the first read through because you're wading through all this administration of the local universe and you just kind of breeze past that. But then you slow down on a second or third read and you say, wait, a transcendent pattern indeed and truth for voluntary marriage even for lowly creatures like us.
But I subordinate to you.
Yeah. And then you're left with a lot of questions here in the 21st century with an epical revelation that is talking about the equality of the sexes in so many ways.
Yeah. And, you know, way back in paper six, this is technically referring not to the Creator Son and Universe Mother Spirit, but I think a larger theme is still similar here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll read a couple sentences of paper six. As love is comprehended on a sex planet, the love of God is more comparable to the love of a father, while the love of the Eternal Son is more like the affection of a mother. Crude indeed are such illustrations, but I employ them in the hope of conveying to the human mind the thought that there is a difference, not in divine content, but in quality and technique of expression between the love of the Father and the love of the Son. Again, we are talking about different beings here, but I do think the underlying truth of this binary differential.
This differential as we often use the word downsteps, it downsteps through the universe. A pattern is on high. It's a transcendent pattern. Then it gets all the way down here to where the humans meet the dirt, and we have to make sense of these transcendent patterns they're revealing to us and figure out how do they apply on a day-to-day basis in a marriage and in a family.
Should we back up and talk a little bit about this subordination, or?
Let's talk about it. That is the big word. That's the humdinger that we would say that's in the South. I'm convinced that's Southern lingo. I hope it is. Otherwise, I don't know where I got that.
Huh.
You know, the first time that really stuck out at me, it was actually some years ago when we were studying this on Symmetry of Soul, our evening Tuesday broadcast. And what it reminded me of then, as it does now, you know, a woman subordinating to a husband, like, just to put it frankly, it reminded me of something 25 years ago in my life. I was early in my adulthood, and some friends of mine at my workplace, they were evangelical Christians, and they were men. We were all single, but they were looking for marriage partners, and they went to something called Promise Keepers. Now, I looked them up. Promise Keepers, it's a quarter century later. They are still around, and they are still a controversial organization, so I'm not endorsing or advocating, but anything here. I'm just pointing out that at that time, a quarter century ago, I was very chafed by some of the things my friends were telling me about this Promise Keepers. They were saying a woman subordinates to her husband, and they were saying the husband provides servant leadership to the family and to the wife. And I remember some of the things they were saying about Promise Keepers sounded good. It's like the men have to get their lives in order and need to provide a role model to their family. But then I heard this thing about subordination, and, you know, I was a reasonably modern fellow, and I said, well, that just can't be. I've heard that women are our equals, and I for one have believed it and lived it. But what do I make sense of this? And so I filed the Promise Keepers away and didn't think about it until we dusted it off the shelf here to think about this.
And I will admit, the first time that I really honed in on this particular section and these words, immediately there was a little resistance. I mean, by the time I was, you know, looking at this more seriously, I've already built, for lack of better phrasing, some trust with this book.
Right.
So, you know, that if this were the first thing for me to read, it's possible I might have just tried to find something else first. But anyway, the point being, really, that was superficial. I mean, once I really got to thinking about it, I actually don't see anything unfair. And I want to now fast forward to paper 181, which is, remind me, this is one of Jesus's final admonition.
Right. This is at the Last Supper. This is basically Jesus's last word to the apostles. In the Bible, some of this is recorded, but it all got sort of mixed up. It's not clear when he delivered all this, but clearly this is individually, it's a very long section. Jesus goes apostle by apostle, giving them, like, if you remember nothing else, my advice to you is this. Watch out for this. I'm about to leave you. And here he is coming to Andrew, I think.
And he says, "Our kingdom is a realm of order. And where two or more will creatures act in cooperation, there is always provided the authority of leadership. So there's just some basic logic at play here. If I forget for a moment, I'm the woman in the relationship, you're the man in the relationship. One of us, I mean, Brad, you and I have been in enough working groups in our lives and committees and what have you. It does not work to have a group, two or more people,
right,
and not have one person who is given authorization to make the final decisions,
not
to rule.
Not in my experience.
Doesn't
and I've tried this on a lot. I've tried to not believe that. I've tried to espouse a very pure democratic ideal, but it is that. It's an ideal. It has to be downstepped appropriately.
Yeah.
And yes, someone has to break the tie. Someone has to say, you know, I'm in the driver's seat right now. Mm-hmm. I have to move us yeah. forward. Yeah, there always has to be that, where there's two or more people.
Yeah, I mean, even in where I think of even the most democratic working groups that I've been, or at least the ones that come to mind first, would be like a chamber music ensemble, like a string quartet or something.
Right.
I mean, even there is sort of a custom of hierarchy, and depending on when the music was written, the music itself is hierarchical. You know, if you go to some of the earlier string quartets by Haydn, for example, it's a first violin piece with some other parts. And, you know, as time goes on, the music itself becomes a little more democratic, you might say.
Right.
But even there, even in those most democratic situations, there still usually arises, not all four people are perfectly equal in their leadership capacities. But mm-hmm. it's also, I've found, not critical for a group to be successful, so long as everyone is being able to contribute artistically. And that's where I might bring our attention to the piece of this proclamation of equality and this transcendent pattern. The last sentence in this section 3 of paper 33, in the creation of other types of universe personalities, both the sun and the spirit function together, and in no creative act does the one do aught without the counsel and approval of the other. So we can be alarmed at subordinating or ruling or what have you, but at the end of the day, they're still consulting with each other when necessary.
consulting with each other on all matters. I mean, it reminds me, not to take a wild tangent into leadership theory, but, you know, we've talked about this. My favorite model of leadership is the, you know, the Star Trek Next Generation. You know, the captain is the captain, but seeks the input from, mm-hmm. you know, everyone else. A decision is made by the captain, but no one leaves the room until they know that they're on the same page and everyone can support the decision that's mm-hmm. being made. But there is still leadership being provided mm-hmm. there. I've seen that happen. I've seen that espoused for boards of directors, yeah. too. This is a valid mode of leadership.
And, I mean, once again, one of the things in life that people can throw out, you know, as a baby with the bathwater when they see it done poorly. I mean, how many men in history have oppressed their wives in the name of rulership, leadership, whatever. And
right.
yeah, that's wrong.
Right.
That's not okay. A reason I say that is, you know, you brought up Star Trek. Well, yes, when Captain Picard or Janeway, you know, there's so many scenes of, you know, the galactic boardroom. And
right.
But and again, this is idealistic, but mm-hmm. those captains, they genuinely listen.
They do.
They're not just giving lip service or ear service, perhaps, to, yeah, sure, let me make sure you have the psychological experience of feeling heard, and then we can move on. I mean, right. they're really caring.
They're trusting that they may not
yes.
have all the answers. Of
right.
course they don't. That's why they have this other person or people in this partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this voluntary pair marriage that we undertake here, we are incomplete
yeah.
as a male or as a female here on this world. And it takes two of us to partner together and chafe against that and deal with all the tension to really work through the ideals of family and marriage.
So one thing we've talked about before on this topic, I've shared, I feel like it's been mostly processing the woman's experience, just
yeah.
maybe given the times we're in right now with this subordination piece. But, you know, I've shared, as I really got to thinking about it, that, you know, maybe that doesn't actually bother me so much. to think more objectively about life as a whole, not just in, you know, a romantic relationship, a marital relationship with my husband, but in working situations. Mm-hmm. How often do I have to subordinate to someone, man or woman? It, you know, I have to do that because that's literally my job. That's not a problem. Except if in those situations where I have to subordinate myself mm-hmm. to another person or to an institution, if I'm not feeling like I'm being properly understood or respected, that I'm not contributing in the most authentic way I can,
right,
that's when that becomes a problem. But it's not literally the fact of subordinating. I do not need to be in control. I don't need that highest position of power. You put me on the spot last week, so I'm going to put you on the spot now, Brad. I'm curious to know your experience as a man. Could you say the same thing, or is your experience a little different? Do you feel more inclined, maybe, than I would be to holding that type of ruling position, being the one being subordinated to?
I think that I am a little more inclined to just being able to take that chair, the captain's chair. I mean, mm-hmm. Captain Picard was a role model for me as a kid, mm-hmm. a fictional one. But I'm not going to say that it's easy. There are plenty of days, if I'm honest, I don't want to get out of bed and have my feet hit the floor and I have to make all these decisions and sort of make these rulings. I'd rather just go with the flow and say, hey, maybe we all just make these decisions together. There's a part in me that will never stop saying that yearns for what I came to call the diffusion of responsibility and accountability. I'm now talking about a workplace, but yeah, it would be easier if I'm not accountable for making those decisions.
The language you're using right now, that sounds to me more of a maturity and character thing.
Right. You know, we talked about some of the limitations of this model. They do say it's a high
yes.
transcendent pattern,
right.
But as things get downstepped, it is very clear. Anyone who's walked yeah. on this earth knows that there are women who are just terrific leaders and men who are not so much. Maya Angelou is a leader. Like she is a spiritual leader. You know, she was. I mean, that was like I would subordinate to her. And also, we're very complex creatures. What may a model of leadership that may work really well in a marriage with subordination? Well, that may not work very well in a workplace or
right.
on a job site where you've got a certain function to do, or in a chamber music group.
It is helpful to be reminded that this is the high ideal of the family and the human institution of voluntary marriage,
right.
Not everything everywhere.
Not everything. The high ideal of family.
But, yeah. Well, and what do you know? The very next sentence in the book is, "The Son and the Spirit now preside over the universe, much as a father and mother watch over and minister to their family of sons and daughters."
There you go. So it is a high pattern. We do have to downstep it carefully, but they've also constrained it and said it's within this context of the family. And then I really like what you're saying about if you're going to subordinate to something, you know,
yes,
be careful who you subordinate to, particularly in a marriage, if this is the high
yep.
ideal.
Well, so you are the first person I've been married to. I would not have been comfortable with this concept of subordinating, I mean, the fidelity and obedience. We haven't talked about that word, but that's in there too,
right.
Obey. I'm thinking of past relationships I had, which I rightly did not let continue to the point of marriage, because there's no way. No, I would be fighting the whole way because there's not enough coherence in values, or we don't have closely enough shared goals, or what have you. I mean, not all women should be subordinating to all men.
Right. This is a personal experience. The pair
right.
marriage, voluntary pair marriage, is supposed to be two personalities working on a relationship together, mm-hmm. all the tension that entails, but it needs to be the correct pairing.
Well, I realize we've spent all of this time talking about my experience of, well, and yours, but
yeah.
referring to, you know, how a woman might relate to this. We haven't gotten to talk much about how you understand this concept of dependence, but maybe you can plant a quick seed and we can come back to this later.
All I can say is I have not actually shared this with you because I've not been able to find words for it. So I'm sure here on in front of a microphone, I'll find words. No, I resonate deeply with that. I depend upon you as my wife. I mean, we've been married for 3 years now. We just had our 3-year anniversary and there's a dependency. You were out of town last week at a conference. That was great. Mm-hmm. But it's not that the whole house fell apart or that I couldn't hold my world together, but there's a dependence that I've come to appreciate having with you. I wish I could expound on it more, but I'm still not finding any words to expound upon that. It is a sense. It is a feeling. It is not just a confirmation because the Urantia book said those words in here. I'm like, well, I have to believe that it's in the Urantia book. No, it's deep in my bones. Like, it feels correct for me to depend on you in our home context and in our marriage context.
Yeah, I would love to talk about this more because that clearly that we just have very different experiences. Because it's very difficult for me to, in my bones, as you said it, relate to that the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, I can think logically and, you know, sure. Well, and it's written right here. Here's the voluntary pattern. That must be so. But that doesn't resonate with me the same way.
Well, we'll, it sounds like a topic for another time. I imagine we'll come back to it here. But there we are. There's one of these sets of passages that you read a second or a third time, and you hear the sound of tires screeching, and as some people feel like they want to take the book and throw it at the wall. They're like, I don't agree with that. But I hope this has been of some help to you as we, Ruthie and I, a married couple, are working through the implications of this transcendent pattern on high for voluntary marriage. Until we see you next time. God bless.
Bye-bye.